One of the movements in the Islamic world that is quite glaring in its raising of slogans for the re-establishment of the Khilafah is Hizb al-Tahrir. Since its founding in the 1950s, the so-called Party of Liberation has made it its hallmark to persistently advocate for its understanding of a Khilafah. It has its roots in the same climate and debates that shaped the Muslim world after the fall of the Uthmani Khilafah, but took shape much later than the initial revivalist movements. Its founder was Sheikh Taqiyuddin al-Nabahani, who was born in Palestine.
Is Muhammad Taqiyuddin ibn Ibrahim bin Mustafa bin Ismail bin Yusuf al-Nabahani. He comes from the Nabahan tribe, whose ascendants, whose roots go back to Tamim al-Dari, the Sahabi. And the tribe, they settled in Palestine. Sheikh Taqi himself, he was born in Izjim, which is a district in Haifa, in Palestine, and he was born in 1909. He was born in the cradle of knowledge. His family were ulama. So it was in a bi'ah, an environment of iman and taqwa, Sheikh Taqiyuddin grew up.
Sheikh Taqiyuddin memorized the Quran at the age of 13. He was greatly inspired by his maternal grandfather, Sheikh Yusuf al-Nabahani's knowledge and awareness. In his youth, he acquired political awareness, especially from those political movements which his grandfather initiated in favor of the Ottoman Khilafah. His keen interest in Islam caught the attention of his grandfather. Thus, Sheikh Yusuf convinced Sheikh Taqi's father to send him to Al-Azhar to attain knowledge of the Sharia.
When Sheikh Taqi was 16, he sent him to Azhar with 5 gold Ottoman liras to pay for his studies. And he, in 1928, he entered Azhar and Darul Uloom, and he began his studies in Azhar, under the instruction and under the guidance of ulama like Sheikh Khidr al-Hussein, who then became the Sheikh al-Azhar.
Upon his graduation, Sheikh Nabahani returned to Palestine, where he began teaching. He, however, soon moved to the judiciary.
In 1933, when Sheikh Taqi, he came back to Palestine, he took up a post as teacher, teaching Ulum al-Din, Islamic sciences, in Haifa. After a while, he realized that because of the occupation, that the education system were being tampered with by the colonialists, and he could not teach the Islamic sciences as it should be taught. And so he left the teaching profession, and then he joined the judiciary. Because he felt, because at that time, even though Palestine was under, you know, British control, British mandate, the qada and the judiciary was still able to judge according to Sharia. And so he took up a position in Ramallah. He was also judge in Jenin. And finally, until 1952, he was the judge in the appeals court in Al-Quds, in Jerusalem.
Sheikh Nabahani studied the society he lived in, as well as the solutions proposed by other Islamic movements for the predicament of the post-Khilafah Muslim world.
It's said that Sheikh Taqi would spend hours on the radio, because in those days, you didn't have, you know, the access to information that we have, just radio. His little radio, wherever he went. And he would listen to the news, what is happening, what is King Farouk doing, what is, you know, happening in Egypt. So political concepts, how do you understand what is happening in the reality?
He arrived at an understanding that solely ridding Muslim countries of foreign occupations would bring no miracle solutions, and that there was an internal crisis in Muslim thought.
The problem wasn't just colonization, because people were gaining, countries were gaining independence. But then what were they doing? After gaining independence, the ruler who was mesmerized by the Western culture was being controlled, remote controlled by the Western powers. The systems and the rules that were being implemented were the same. So really, we had not physical colonization, we had intellectual colonization. So just fighting is not going to solve the problem of this ummah. Because what tended to happen is after independence, the Muslims started to fight amongst themselves. Because there was no clear vision of what is the solution, what is the alternative, once the invader has gone.
Based on this, Hizb ut-Tahrir was founded in Al-Quds in 1953 as a political party. Its stated purpose was to revive the Islamic Ummah from the severe decline that it had reached and to liberate it from the thoughts, systems and laws of Kufr, as well as the domination and influence of the Kufr states. It also aimed to restore the Islamic Khilafah so that ruling by what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala revealed returns.
Sheikh Taqiyuddin, you know, he established the party in 1953 with this vision, with this understanding that the problem of the Ummah is not occupation. The problem of the Ummah is not our moral degeneration. The problem of the Ummah is not that we are not spiritual enough. The problem of the Ummah is that we have ideologically declined. We cannot see Islam as a way of life. We do not see Islam as a solution to life's problems. We've lost thiqa and our confidence in Islam. Therefore, in the minds of the Muslims, this thiqa needs to be brought back through da'wah. And the existing systems need to be changed. And only then will be at the point of recovery. He did not say the Khilafah is the beginning, you know, we'll solve all the problems and there will be no problem. No, that is the point of the recovery of the Ummah. And with that, he set about working.
The Sheikh penned a number of books to elucidate his ideology and program.
For example, one of the early books of Hizb ut-Tahrir, The System of Islam. In this book, for the first time, in a clear manner, it talked about Islam as a system, not as a set of rituals, but Islam as a system, as a way of life, as an ideology, providing solutions to life's problems. Because the Hizb realized, Sheikh Taqi realized the problem was people had lost confidence in the Islamic solutions, either because they did not see Islam having solutions, so they went to the West for solutions, or the solutions that Islam had, they could not appreciate how these will practically manifest and solve our problems. Because these were seen as just ahkam, not as solutions. And so in Nizam al-Islam, he outlined this point, how Islam is a way of life. Islam is a nizam, a system. It's an ideology. It's a way of life, a system that is to be implemented in society. And he talked about capitalism and communism. You might not make much of, you know, communism now, but at that time, communism was a big thing, especially in the Soviet, you know, during the Cold War. So he wrote refutations of capitalism, how to understand the capitalist ideology and refute it, how to understand the fallacy of the communist ideology and refute it, and how books outlining and detailing this.
The party defined its method of work into three stages. The first stage, it said, was to be a stage of culturing to produce people who believe in the idea and the method of the party. The second stage was one of interaction with the Ummah, so that the Ummah takes on the aims of the party as its own issue and thus works to establish Islam in the affairs of life. Lastly, the third stage was one of establishing an Islamic state, or the Khilafah.
So we talked about the culturing stage and the interaction stage, which has three components, which is intellectual struggle and political strife and seeking Nusra. And the third component, the third stage, is implementing all of Islam.
Right at its outset, the group faced swift crackdowns and was outlawed in Jordan. Sheikh Nabahani and other leaders were recurrently jailed and had to always watch their movements. Still, the movement and its ideas did take hold in the Levant and beyond.
The work continued. It began to spread in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, and the da'wah spread in all of these countries. Shattaqi, he traveled so many times, you know, from Lebanon to Syria, if you study his life, to all these places, and he sent people, he sent Sheikh Abdul Qadir Zalloum to Iraq to establish the cola of the party there. He sent him to also to Turkey to establish the party there and the work. And the work increased, brothers.
Sheikh Nabahani passed away in 1977 and has been succeeded by two leaders since. The party prides itself with sticking to its central purpose in spite of the passage of time and continues to use the books of Sheikh Nabahani as its key program.
And one of the things is still abiding is the fact that the party will not compromise whatever happens. This is something known about Hizb ut-Tahrir. In fact, in 1953, it talked about the ideological danger in Takatul al-Hizbi, one of the works. It said that the people, the party, will be between two fires. One is that as it is exposing the rulers, obviously it's going to incur the wrath of the rulers. But also, if that ruler is popular, it's going to incur the wrath of the people. And in fact, that's exactly what happened in the time of Jamal Abdel Nasser. Because people were mesmerized by this man, who was talking about unity, removing the colonialists, doing brave action like, you know, nationalizing the Suez, which was built by the French and the British. And at that time, the party came out and said he's an agent. It was easy to compromise at that time. In fact, many Shabab could not take the pressure because it sounded crazy to say something like that at that time against public opinion, against the rulers. Many left at that time. It was a test for the party. But the Sheikh persevered and he continued. And the party also continued and remained true to its ideas and did not compromise. Because easy to change and to remain silent. Because the party have seen and discussed this in Takarul Hizbi, that how many other parties, when they set about with ideals, because they compromised, they ended up complete opposite of how they began.
Hizb ut-Tahrir has been the subject of internal Muslim criticism for several reasons. Its arguments have been described as simplistic, and while calling for a holistic embrace of Islam, its apparent focusing on other aspects of worship and spirituality has been minuscule. Its approach has also been described as empty sloganeering. Furthermore, some passages in Sheikh Nabahani's works have led to allegations of the group having Mu'tazila beliefs and certain deviant views in fiqh and aqidah. Another prominent Muslim movement that arose in the 1940s was the Jamaat-e-Islami, a party founded in British-controlled India by Maulana Abul A'la al-Maududi. Maulana Maududi believed that change would come from top-down rather than bottom-up. The focus was on preparing an elite group to buy into the idea of an Islamic state. This was driven by a belief that the general public was lacking in influence and unable to take matters into its own hands. The movement initially focused on individual reform before political reform, but by 1957, attaining political power became the central aim. Around this time, more than 200 ulama left the party due to disagreements over direction, ideology, and personality. Maulana Abul Hasan Ali al-Nadwi, rahimahullah, was one of the ulama who was initially a member of the Jamaat-e-Islami. He acknowledged the ideological and intellectual impact and contribution that Maulana Maududi's works had on a new Islamic generation. However, Maulana Abul Hasan withdrew from the party when he saw in some of Maulana Maududi's writings elements that veered from the cause of the Salaf. Various ulama have listed his unacceptable criticisms and language used to describe the actions of Sahaba radiallahu anhum. Maulana Abul Hasan rahimahullah also advised the Jamaat-e-Islami on the need to pay attention to tarbiyah and spirituality so that the political aspect does not impose itself over all other aspects of Islam. The Islamic awakening that was taking root during these decades since the fall of the Khilafah was described as a worldwide movement, though not centralized or coordinated. An individual like Mawlana Abul Hasan Ali al-Nadawi, rahimahullah, took a keen interest in this awakening, but he did not restrict himself to any one specific group or movement. As Sheikh Yusuf al-Qardawi has observed, he remained free, and where he would see points of weakness, he would direct different groups, advise them, criticize them, and set them aright with the hope that they would continue in goodness. For a holistic and wholesome Islamic awakening to take hold, Mawlana Abul Hasan Ali al-Nadawi rahimahullah mentioned certain golden principles. The awakening, he said, had to be in accordance with correct Islamic aqidah, the Quran, the Sunnah, the way of the Khulafa Rashidun, and the understanding of accepted scholars. The awakening required broad and in-depth understanding of the Quran and the Sunnah on the one hand, coupled with social awareness and understanding of contemporary issues. He warned that the movement must not be negative and hasty in confronting governments. If this approach is taken, he said, it would cause unnecessary problems and cause energies and time to go to waste. Leaders of the Islamic awakening, he emphasized, must keep a distance from official positions of authority and power and lives of luxury and indulgence. Lastly, he said, the revivers must be driven by a spirit of sacrifice, courage, abstinence, the ability to calculate and take necessary risks, and ultimately, they should always keep absolute trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.